95.9 The Fan. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Normally, this insider is brought to us on a Monday, but it's a Tuesday because the guy got stuck inside of a plane. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, analyst for Westwood One, and you can follow him at Ross Tucker NFL. What's up, man? How are we doing?
I'm doing a lot better than I was yesterday. Yeah, that was hilarious. But we landed, so I was flying back from Tampa after calling the game Sunday, landed in Charlotte at 6:25, so I was going to do another one of those famous Charlotte airport interviews with you guys.
Yeah. But, that's the spot. Charlotte is our spot.
For 40 to 45 minutes, they could not get the jet bridge to attach to the plane. There was people that had tighter connections than me. They were losing their mind. You're at the airport. You're right there, and you're going to miss your flight. They eventually had to have us all sit down again, put our bags away again, and move to a different gate. So I was the whole time I was texting with Danelli to be like, hey, I'm good. No, maybe not good. Definitely not good. Sorry.
As long as you're not one of those people that stands up and tries to exit the plane while they're when they tell you it's not time to stand up. That's probably my biggest pet peeve when it comes to airlines, people that just stand up. But let's get into the game that you were at. So Bucks and Rams, we're watching through the TV. We talked about it yesterday. We could sense the Brady effect, right? We could kind of sense the tightening up just through the TV. Was it something that you could feel through the stadium when the game started to get a little closer that maybe he was about to have this another incredible comeback?
Well, here's the thing. I almost feel like it was an incredible collapse rather than an incredible comeback. I mean, I remember thinking, you know, gosh, this is my third straight blowout. This stinks. All I want is a close game. You know, I was really bummed out about it. And my play-by-play guy was like, you know, you never know. I'm like, yeah, I guess. But, like, they can't move the ball at all. They can't block them. They can't stop them on defense. How is this going to happen? And that's why there have been other comebacks where I felt like it was a lot of Brady. This felt like it was a lot of the Rams kind of peeing down their leg. I mean, four fumbles, you know, Cooper Kupp fumbles. Cam Akers, the last fumble, you've got to be kidding me. Like, that's the only thing he can't do in that situation is fumble, and yet that's exactly what he does. The snap from the center that Stafford wasn't ready for. I mean, I think I tweeted during the game, at Ross Tucker NFL, that I swear some of these things only happen to the team playing against Tom Brady's team. And what was funny being there is, there was a decent amount of fans that left. Yeah, I don't know if it was when it was 27-6 or 27-13. They started walking for the exits. You know what a lot of them did? They would walk, like, away from their seats up to the tunnel. But they didn't quite leave. You know what I mean? Like, they were kind of, like, watching the next – and then the guy fumbled, and then they all came running back to their seats. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that reminds me, just Florida sports fans in general, of them leaving the Miami Heat game where Ray Allen hits the shot, right? They all leave and they all try to get back in to watch the Heat beat the Spurs. It's like, nope, too late. You left the stadium. I can't imagine leaving a Tom Brady comeback had he actually pulled that off. Also, the disrespect to Tom Brady. Yeah, I agree, Ross. It seemed like they changed their game plan completely. It seemed like they went away from what was working. And that's the only good part of this, is that they had a bit of a meltdown. They do escape. But to me, Stafford is pretty blameless in this. It sounds like maybe you thought he was more at fault for that bad snap or whatever. Maybe that's just you being a lineman sticking up for other linemen. But to me, this is a game where Stafford still ends up coming out on top of Tom Brady. And now that's two playoff wins for him in a row. It feels like maybe he has justified that trade and that we are now starting to look at Matthew Stafford differently, even though he hasn't made it to the Super Bowl yet. Like, regardless of outcome here, has Matthew Stafford's legacy changed? Because I feel like it has to after you beat Tom Brady in his building.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not putting any blame on Stafford for what happened. I don't know what happened with him in the center, with them not being on the same page on the shotgun snap, but I'm not putting that on Stafford. My guess is it was a communication issue, or the center heard something that he thought was the quarterback calling for the ball, but maybe it was really something on the defense. I thought Stafford was pretty much flawless in the game. I thought he was awesome. I thought he played one of the best games he's ever played in the biggest game of his life. I thought going into the weekend, he had the most to gain and Aaron Rodgers had the most to lose. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, Aaron Rodgers losing at home in the playoffs again is just terrible, I think, for his legacy. Whereas for Stafford, you're exactly right. You know, now he has two playoff wins under his belt. Now he has a road playoff win over Tom freaking Brady, and he's hosting a conference championship game and getting the Rams further than they did a year ago. And I can see the trade now, right? I don't think Jared Goff would have made that last throw to Cooper Kupp. That, you know, it's really, you know, yep. You boil it down to one play, but that's a big reason why Stafford's there and Goff is not. I think it was huge for Stafford, and he obviously has a couple more opportunities potentially to really change what people think of him.
So some conversations circling around after that game is the future for Tom Brady. Wondering your thoughts on if that's it, if he's too much of a competitor that he's going to come back, or that's kind of the last that we'll see of him.
You know, I didn't really know where it came from last week, but it seems real. It seems like this could really be it. You start to hear more of his quotes, and he sounds like a guy that is strongly considering moving on. I mean, I guess his oldest son is like starting high school. And I think he is trying to make a decision as to what he thinks is best for his family and what he wants to do with his life. I think it's a distinct possibility. You know, now I said to the guys before the game that I was doing the broadcast with, if they lost to the Rams, I can't imagine that Brady would want to go out that way. You know, like losing, not playing well in the divisional round. It just doesn't seem like he's just so competitive. I have a tough time picturing him going out that way. But the flip side is, if they won a Super Bowl, I kind of feel like he would want to see if he could do it again and win three in a row or whatever. In other words, every scenario I contemplate ends with Tom Brady coming back to play yet again, which means he never, ever retires, which just can't possibly be the case. This sounds like it could potentially be real. I mean, Gronkowski can barely move. I don't think he really wants to play anymore. And I think it's a distinct possibility. I would say it's 50-50 at best that Brady plays again right now.
Well, Gronkowski's got that wrestling career to worry about, you know, another WrestleMania payday on the horizon, all that good stuff. So elsewhere on that playoff weekend, Ross, the Tennessee Titans did not look great. Ryan Tannehill obviously had a pretty mistake-prone game. The shine of Vrabel's strong regular season kind of wore off a little bit. Who do you think had a worse performance, or who does more of that hang on, Tannehill or Vrabel?
It's a good question, because those are clearly the two guys, right? I mean, I did not like either one of the decisions that Vrabel made ahead of time. You know, so going for two, I'm a big believer in making informed decisions and utilizing the data and the win probability statistics to help inform your decision. But not all kicking the extra point versus going for two decisions are created equal. I mean, the score was 6-6. Kick the extra point and have the lead in the game. Like, I thought that was really a poor decision by Vrabel, and he's a former teammate of mine. I think he's a great coach. I thought it was a really bad decision. And then even later on, when they went for it on fourth and one, I didn't hate the decision to go for it on fourth and one. I really did not like the play call because it didn't allow Henry to really get ahead of steam and run that zone play to the left that he's so good at. But even then, they were already in field goal range, and it was a tie game. It was 16-16. I did not love either one of those decisions, and Tannehill played extremely poorly, and that is why people were skeptical of the Titans as a number one seed, and people are skeptical of Tannehill because he falls into the category of people that you don't expect to rise to the occasion in the playoffs, and he didn't.
Yeah, I'm with you on Vrabel. I couldn't believe that they had two third and one, fourth and one, and neither of them includes your big athletic quarterback just sneaking the ball forward, that you do some weird RPO and then you give Henry that spot. Like, just, yeah, his entire game, the going for two, whatever. Just anything you break down for Vrabel, it was just an odd one. But, man, Tannehill was so bad that I wonder, can you come back with him after a performance like that? Like, you're a one seed. You are obviously trying to win in the Derrick Henry era. Your defense is ready and primed right now. The defense was spectacular in that game. You're not going to fire Vrabel. He's coming off of a Coach of the Year performance. I don't think that you're getting that reactionary. But do you move off Tannehill? Do you explore that option this year despite his success with that franchise so far?
You know, I think if somebody calls you and says that Aaron Rodgers wants to come to Nashville, or Russell Wilson wants to come to Nashville, maybe even Deshaun Watson, which is extremely unlikely in the division, I think you have to take that call and explore that possibility. But I'm not a big believer. I mean, Tannehill's proven he can win some playoff games. You know, he won at New England against Tom Brady in 19, then he won at Baltimore against Lamar Jackson. So I'm not a believer in just moving, like, to get who? To get Carson Wentz? I mean, like, the other guys that would be available – I don't think really represent big upgrades, if at all, from Tannehill if they can't get, you know, Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers. So certainly I would take that call, but he's not the first guy to have a bad playoff game. I mean, Kyler Murray was horrendous. Jalen Hurts didn't play well. And I know Tannehill's been around longer than those guys, but, you know, I didn't think Tom Brady played particularly well, to be honest with you.
The other side of that Titans game, Bengals come through. You know, I don't think they look like world beaters or anything like that. Definitely felt more here to like a Titans loss than the Bengals kind of snatching that and running with it. Looking ahead to this weekend, what can the Bengals do or shift to play the upset here? Like, what is the David strategy against a team as high-powered as the Chiefs?
Well, you know, they should have confidence given the fact that they were able to beat them a few weeks ago in the regular season. So that should give the Bengals a boost that they can do it again. That said, I really don't see it, guys. I mean, the Bengals offensive line really struggled against the Titans. I think going to Arrowhead, and I'll be there on the sideline for Westwood One, it's going to be so loud. I think the Bengals offensive line will struggle. Joe Burrow, maybe the biggest thing they can do is just not take the sacks he was taking. I mean, he almost cost the Bengals a bunch of times with the sacks he was taking, and be opportunistic, make some plays in the secondary like he did against the Titans. I mean, it's going to take Jesse Bates and Mike Hilton getting interceptions and Burrow, you know, doing his best Josh Allen impersonation, throwing the ball for the Bengals to have a chance. I think, unfortunately, that there's a real chance that game gets away from the Bengals and that the Chiefs win by double digits.
You mentioned Josh Allen, and obviously as a Bills fan, that was just like the most gut-wrenching end to a game we've ever seen. One thing that we haven't really spent much time on, and I'm curious to get your opinion because you've played, is that OT situation, and if that's something you would want to change, or am I only feeling this way because the Bills didn't get the coin toss? And it's a big question circling online afterwards because it's a hot topic, but you know, you've played. So what do you actually think of the overtime rules?
Right. So let's start with this, right? The number one thing I hear from everybody is both teams need to get a chance to have the ball in overtime, right? That's sort of the highlight that's flashing. What I don't really understand about that one is, let's say they put in the rule that both teams get the ball unless the first team scores a touchdown and they score a touchdown. So let's say they put it in there that both teams get the ball. In that game, the way it was going, the Chiefs go down and score a touchdown. I'm pretty confident the Bills would have gone down and scored a touchdown. And then I'm pretty sure the Chiefs go down and score a touchdown again. So I guess I don't really understand what we would fix in that scenario. You know, whoever wins the coin toss still ends up getting one more possession and they end up winning the game. I don't think that part of it solves it. And I'm fine, by the way, with the college overtime. You know, if you want to have both teams alternate possessions at the 25, or maybe because it's the NFL, the 35 or something like that, I'm fine with that. I like the college overtime. But what people don't realize is even there's a distinct advantage to winning the coin toss. You know, you get to go second. So you see what the first team does, and it informs your possession. Do you have to go for on fourth down because they scored a touchdown? And I tweeted this last night at Ross Tucker NFL. As of 3 years ago, guys, winning the coin toss in the new format, the new NFL format, going back to 2010, NFL overtime format, you win the coin toss in the NFL, you win 52.7% of the time. You win the coin toss in college football, you win 54.9% of the time. So I think everybody stylistically wants to see them both get the ball. I'm fine with that. And I think the college style would sort of accommodate that. But it's never going to be 50-50. Like, whoever wins the coin toss, it's always going to be an advantage for one team or the other.
Yeah, I think you're right that there's going to be an advantage for one team or the other. I think that the perception of not letting anybody else touch the ball does have to change. And part of me goes, well, if the Bills had won, no one would be crying about this because everybody was rooting for the Bills other than Chiefs fans. So that is a big component here. The Chiefs had this happen to them, and we did the bit of this outcry, but it wasn't nearly to the same degree. To me, this is just like a straight up play the full 15 minutes. Like, I don't know why you can't just play the full quarter and how that doesn't just detract from some of this and have it be like there is no sudden death. You're just playing a quarter. Have it be like soccer where it does the extra time, you know? Like, and then if it continues to go or if it's still tied, then maybe move into something else. But the college one feels a little too gimmicky for me, for the NFL. I've seen crazy stuff like bidding systems, you know, where the teams, you know, basically agree like who would get the ball first based on, you know, you can bid for where you would take the ball from, which I think is kind of interesting, but something that the league would never do. But you're right. A lot of this is just, I would say that it's unlikely to change.
And here's what I would say too. I guess I'm just a really, you know, we can talk about tweaking the overtime rules and ways to make it better. Potentially, there was over 140 plays in regulation. The Bills had the lead with 13 seconds left. Their coaches, in my opinion, blew the game. Number one, not squib kicking. Number two, they're protecting the out of bounds when it's 13 seconds left and the Chiefs have three timeouts. Why are you funneling everything in the middle of the field and protecting the out of bounds? They had the wrong call in. They're rushing four when Mahomes has to throw the ball within 2 seconds. So that's a waste. You should rush two, drop nine, have four deep, five under. I guess if you think overtime can be improved, let's have that discussion. If you're blaming the overtime rules for the Bills losing, you know, that's a totally different discussion that I'm not okay with. I appreciate that Sean McDermott, I mean, even after the game, Josh Allen said, we didn't do more. Really, Josh? What else were you supposed to do, dude? Like Josh Allen took personal accountability, and he was, like, perfect the whole game. The coaches are the ones that blew it. It bothers me. I would have just been driving up to Buffalo on Saturday, maybe ski at Holiday Valley, be on the sidelines. Now I got to fly to Kansas City. I mean, these guys don't realize at the end of that game Sunday night, it's about me. It's about my travel plans. It's about how it affects my next weekend.
Ross, I hope you have a good weekend. I really do. I really hope that the weekend comes through for you as always. Thanks as always for joining us, man. And I'm sure next time we talk to you, we'll once again be in the Charlotte airport.
By the way, yeah, you know what? Actually, no. It'll be Chicago Airport coming back from Kansas City on Monday morning. By the way, real quick, everybody listening, get your significant other a story from myfrontpagestory.com for Valentine's Day. It is the greatest gift ever. Your wife will cry in a good way. Just check it out, myfrontpagestory.com. Thank you, guys.
Got it. See you later, Ross. This was great.
See you, dude.
Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman. And again, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. What do you guys think about the OT rules? Like, do you want me to explain? Did you see the thing on bidding system? Do you want me to explain? Essentially, it's just back and forth. Yeah, the teams go back and forth saying where they would take the ball from to get it first. So you keep the same rules. But there is obviously a point of, you know, diminishing returns where, like, if a team is starting to say, like, we'll take the ball from within our own 10, you're like, well, we'll take it from the 8. We'll take it from the 9. Like, you're not going to take the ball from the 1, right? So, like, eventually you decide, like, okay, who's going to actually take this thing? So the bidding system is the most creative one I've seen that could actually be fun, watching it be like Storage Wars, where you're like, yep, you know, for teams willing to take the spot closer to their own goal line. But I think, again, too gimmicky. College for me, like I said, too gimmicky. I agree with Ross. Just both teams getting to touch the ball is also stupid. Doesn't make any sense to me. Too much of an advantage one way. The team that gets it second ends up having a huge advantage.
Like, I think just play another quarter. Like, I like that.
You're on quarter?
That you threw out there. Because it's not like, okay, everybody gets the same chance. It's like, okay, play an entire... Like, I would have loved to see that game go another 10, 15, 20 minutes and another game to be played. Like, I think that to me, is a better... normal indicator of what the game flow would be. You're not putting them in a position for one drive. It's like, hey, what would you do in another quarter? Like, that game came down to 2 minutes, basically. Imagine seeing that again, just like stretched out over another quarter. I think that to me seems like the best, easiest, without all the, you know, the little rules and this player goes. And then if they get 2 points, like if both teams get a touchdown, Ross had a good point. Like, that could have happened. Both teams could have got a touchdown. Then what? So if you play a 15-minute thing, I think that's great.
So that insider, by the way, was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Blake, you're a smart guy. What am I missing here? Why does the 15 minutes not make sense?
It does. Like, I think it's better than the current solution. There will still be an edge to getting the ball first. I don't know that there's a way to legislate out the advantage of getting the ball first. One thing I wondered as we pondered this, and like, I like the 15 minutes, I like the CFL system. One thing that struck me, and this would be difficult to get acceptance on, I think, but if we want to talk about making the regular season more valuable and the value of home field, instead of a coin toss, the home field gets the ball first. And you still get the same chance to respond, but what that allows an away team to do, and what it allows teams at the end of game to do, is to build their fourth quarter strategy with that additional knowledge of how overtime is going to work. So where, you know, if you're the Chiefs there and you score, you know, say that game was in Buffalo instead, and you score that touchdown and you're down one and you're making the extra point or 2 point conversion decision, but you don't know it's going to a coin flip where you have a 50-50 of getting the ball. You know, hey, this game's in Buffalo. They're going to get the ball, so we're going for two and going for the win here. I think that is maybe a little more fair, just to provide both teams with the certainty and the kind of agency to choose their fate heading into overtime or avoid it, while also spicing up regular season games with a little more home field advantage. There's probably some negative externality to that I'm not thinking of, where, you know, maybe it makes the end of games a little more boring because you have home teams playing for a tie or whatever. But I do wonder if that would be weighed out by, like, overtime's not a certainty, right? And getting the ball back first, the other team still gets to respond and things like that. So I'm just, it's a way, I think, to remove the 50-50 nature. And yes, it shifts advantages elsewhere, but then you're approaching those advantages with A, they've been earned by way of home field advantage, and B, the other team knows that advantage is coming and can strategize around it.
I like that, because yesterday JD made the point that it doesn't feel like there's much to be said about home field advantage anymore, right? Like, you just go and you play at a stadium and you haven't really seen the difference between a home field advantage. That would certainly give a little bit of edge to being the top team, to being the team that gets a home field advantage. So I like that. And I don't know if you saw that stat I put in the chat while Ross Tucker was talking. He said that it's about a 50-51, 52% win rate when you win the coin toss. But I did see that playoff teams have a 90% win rate in overtime if they win the coin toss. And that's just for playoff stats. So like very significant difference from the regular season to the playoffs. Obviously I looked that up because of the Bills, but a really, really big difference. 90% of the time that you win a coin toss in the playoffs, you're going to win overtime. So that one hurts.
I got to tell you, one, I don't trust that stat from you because that feels like Bill's propaganda to almost.
It's a real stat. The, even like, Blake like, confirmed that, it in
yeah,
the chat.
You know, like that. Yeah, that is just a.
It's real.
That it's like, let's see that from a non-Bills website. You know,
it's,
like Bills replaythegame.com.
Look it up.
You know, yeah, it's no, it is. So, I don't really like. I should clarify something. When I say that I don't believe there's home field advantage, I just mean that in the sense of when it comes to gambling edges, I don't think it's worth the standard stock 3 points anymore. Mm-hmm. It used to be a standard stock 3 points, but I do think home field advantage matters. And I do think that that is a good enough reward. Like, to me, I can't get behind that for a couple of reasons. One, if you're in the playoffs, the top home seed already gets a bye, which if you look at statistically, the probability of you making it to the Super Bowl is insane. So this is a complete outlier year where we're going to have both the teams that don't have a bye are not going to be in the Super Bowl. That's nuts. That is a crazy, crazy, crazy statistical outlier. So giving even more of an advantage to the team that finishes with the top seed, I can't get behind that. And a home field advantage I do think is a thing. Like, you get the benefit of being at home. You get the benefit of your home facilities, your fans, your crowd, your field. Like, nah, I can't give you also an overtime thing. Plus, Blake, I know that, like, I was already trying to go through those scenarios in my head of what would happen at the end of a game that would suck. I don't really see a very many scenarios where you would see a team playing for the tie, because you're right. Overtime isn't a certainty, and like, what, you're getting the ball at your own 25. That's going to be, where are you on the field where it doesn't make sense for you to still try and go for the win when you have time and the ball? But I think it's more just the gimmick of forcing that other team all of a sudden to go for two when they would have tied it, and they should really just be extending the game. Like, that to me feels like more of a disadvantage. So I don't... Like, I actually like that it's a creative idea, and I like that they're kicking it around. To me, it's just there's one of two options that you can accept. Either that life isn't fair and sports is not everything has to be fair. You're never going to find a solution that's like 50-50 perfect, right? And so do you really want to change this system for something that might end up bearing out similar results? I don't know. But I just, when I look at all these different strategies, I don't want to have gimmicks because it's a playoffs. I want to have it feel like it is representative of the best possible thing. That's why I don't like the college rules. I don't like the CFL rules. I just want to see you play the extra 15 minutes because I know there's an advantage there, and I know that someday someone's going to write the article about the team that gets the ball first in overtime still wins X amount of games. But to me, it's just more about you got to get rid of the idea that a team can't get the ball and loses in overtime. That is one that is just, it's to me, not sustainably defensible for the league, no matter how you cut it. And the only way to counter it is to say that both teams have everything the same, essentially. You both have 15 minutes to win this football game. Go out there and do it. Go make this final score what it is. And that's it. That's the entire play.
The other one element you could add to that is, hey, if you both score a touchdown and it's still tied at the end of the 15 minutes, whoever's drive was quicker, whoever scored the touchdown fastest, or hey, send it to judges' scorecards. The three of us will rate the game. Yeah.
Have them do a field goal kickoff,
but,
like a shootout.
But this is what I mean, though, is like I do fear that the idea, like that's what I feel when I hear about college football playoffs. Maybe that's the only one. But that would be a nightmare for me. Like, I hate the college. The college football thing is fine because they're collegiate athletes, and you say, hey, nobody here is getting paid. Let's wrap this sucker up. Let's all get out of here. We forget how taxing this sport is, that adding another quarter to a football game is a pretty intense proposition. Like, did you see those defenses at the end of that Chiefs-Bills game? Like, you think that anybody was getting a sack or somebody was getting a stop or that the guy still wanted to be run blocking or, like, taking more hits? Absolutely not. College, to me, it's fine. Whatever. NFL, you can't have that. You just can't. Let's take a break, and let's take more of your texts. Hey, if someone else has an overtime solution, pitch it, all right? Some genius out there This is your chance to crack through and have a voice on this show. Whatever you want, final block of the show. It's Text Line Tuesday. The DMs are also open at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, and Blake Murphy. It's the Fan Morning Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Text next. You know, most of the time Blake talks about wrestling, I just want him to stop talking about wrestling. Like, it's like he starts, and I'm like, please stop talking about wrestling. Please stop talking about... He just hit me with some wrestling information in a break, which is just... That's the wrestling information I want on the show. About... I didn't know Triple H had a heart attack. Get better soon, Triple H. But he's talking about power plays behind the scenes for control of the WWE and how Triple H's whole crew is axed while he's in the hospital. I'm like, this sounds like they wrote it for wrestling. Like, this sounds like... The people who did this to Triple H's people should be the people who are writing the dirt notes, because that's good dirt notes. Dirt sheets, dirt notes,
dirt
whatever.
Sheets. But again, the dirt sheets isn't the script. The dirt sheets is like the reporting around the,
well,
the thing.
The script the is dirt sheets the script. Is what I believe it is in my heart, you know? The dirt sheets are what I believe it is in my heart. So it's the Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 5.9 The Fan. It's Text Line Tuesday, so fire away. You want to know more about that Triple H drama that Blake just outlined that I'm so interested in? Listen, I love the show Inside the Ring, or Darkness Inside the Ring, or whatever the
Dark
hell it's called.
Dark Side of the Ring.
Dark Side of the Ring, because I throw it up on...
Sounds like you love it, eh? You don't even know the name of it.
You know what? I throw it up. It's a great... It is a really great show. There are some where I just can't mess with them because they're just so far back wrestler-wise. But wrestling is so great for all the behind-the-scenes things, because it is dark. It's... These guys are ultimate weirdos, and it's fun to watch their crazy lives behind the scenes. So... Yes, I love the Dark Side of the Ring series, and I already need a Dark Side of the Ring on guy gets a heart attack, and then they put a hatchet to his entire controlling operation of the company. That's a great future Dark Side of the Ring episode. Can't wait to have Blake Murphy do a spot on that one where he comes in and explains the scenario. Awesome. Blake making a cameo on one of my favorite shows is going to be great. I really can't wait for it. It's like when you guys are on Tim and Friends. Text. Ailish, I know you have a lot of things in the text line right now.
You set it up well by asking people about the
Triple H?
Somebody
ask Blake about Triple H, please. I want to hear more about this. And I don't have time today after the show to get into it with him. Okay, so let's start with the OT rules, because I know that you have some creative ones that are in there.
Yeah, this one is right on par with what we were just talking about. NFL overtime. A cage descends from the rafters. Each team chooses a champion to compete in trial by combat.
Yeah. Everybody, but like, here's the thing. Then everybody just carries a killer on their roster, you know? Like, everybody just is like, hey, you know who's the big winner there? Francis Ngannou, who's in his contract dispute with the UFC. He's like, I just signed a $100 million deal with the NFL as end of the fight cage fighter. What a moment for Francis Ngannou. Like, Dana White won't put the belt on him because he knows he can't afford to to match the NFL. Love that one.
Okay, so... This is similar. Each team gets their biggest linebacker or defensive back into the center logo, and then they sumo wrestle for the win. Let's go.
Okay. All right. Non-fighting ones now. Okay. Like different variations of people fight for the win.
Fine. This is a good question. JD, do you think because football is so gambling heavy that Vegas would have an issue with a fifth quarter played in full, game totals and things of that nature?
For sure.
They didn't think about the aspect of that.
For sure. This is why I said smarter people than me out there have to calculate things. Here's the thing, though, is it's overtime, right? I'm not saying you change this in the regular season. I'm saying that you change this in the playoffs. And what? You guys threw up 76, 66, and 10 in regular season, 10 and 1 in playoffs. I don't know what that sample is over. I'm guessing that's a very, very long time.
Since the new rule in, I think, 2010 or 2011.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, wait, what is that? Oh, yeah, 10 and 1. So there's only been 11 times then over that span where the game has gone to overtime. Like, that's just something that the books already take into account in other sports where you say, hey, I have NBA totals tonight, right? We all have, let's say we have the over in the Raptors game tonight. Well, overtime in the NBA is infinite, and you can bet that. No one, I don't really think you bet with overtime in mind when it comes to mm-hmm. totals. I don't think you ever bet like, hey, well, if this game goes to overtime, the only bet you ever make in that way is, will the game go to overtime? And usually you get that number around like plus 12,000, right? So it's just like, it's usually like a 12 to 1 bet, a 13 to 1 bet for a game going to overtime. So I don't see how you would be really factoring that in too much with the books. It is definitely a consideration with all the money that these places take, but I think to me it's more of just the fatigue and what you're getting with the game product than it is anything else.
Okay, here's one from Dave. Thought for NFL overtime. Each team starts at the 10-yard line, and you start with three downs to score. Alternate till team doesn't score a touchdown. No field goals allowed. If both teams don't score on the first three downs, you move it to two downs. Then to one down, but you move it to the 3-yard line. Game is won when one team scores a touchdown, the other can't match it.
Yeah, too many things, too many variables.
That's
there.
Too many you rules,
like,
but
once you got into the 14th thing, I'm like, how is that just not better than just
what's currently
the 15
happening?
Minutes, right? Again, I appreciate the creativity, and mm-hmm. part of me wishes the NFL had, like, Major League Baseball has the minor leagues where they can just test out rules.
Or the G League. Yeah.
Yeah, the G, where they're like, hey, we're going to give this a shot. And then everyone goes, yep, that's fine because no one's watching these games or cares. You know, so let's go, rats. Figure it out. Do our experiments for us. But we don't have that, unfortunately. They just have college sports, and you can't do these things in college, right? You can't experiment with things at the college level. It's not supposed to necessarily just be like – it is a feeder system, but you know what I mean. It's not necessarily supposed to be a feeder system. So, yeah, tough. It's tough. I wish you could play these things out because I'm sure that mm-hmm. one or two of them would hit. There are things in sports that I love the ideas of, and it makes me sad that we'll never see them, like the draft – for playoff teams to pick their opponent. Like, you know how amazing that would be if you had to send your general manager or your head coach or representation to a draft where you picked the other team with the first overall pick. You went up there and selected a team that wasn't the eighth place team for the play. It would be amazing. We would get so much fodder from it. It would create so much conversation around sports, but they would just never do stuff like that. And that's how I kind of feel about some of these overtime rules, is even if there was something that was overly creative that worked, the league probably would shy away from doing it.
Okay, so how about... This is a text from Paul from Etobicoke. The really old overtime rules used 2 10-minute quarters. The tension at the end of regulation time was repeated at the end of overtime.
2 10-minute quarters in football?
Apparently. That's what Paul from Etobicoke says. The really old overtime rules. So we have to look back quite a while for that because I'm not familiar with it, but that sounds like a very long additional period to add.
That's
but the
a lot.
Two that yeah like at that point the 15 minute is probably okay.
I'm just saying, between, like, you got to remember that this isn't soccer, right? This isn't a clock that just runs the entire time. This is, I'm assuming you would be getting timeouts for each of the quarters. I'm not automatically giving 2 quarters. And then what, mm-hmm. automatically at the end of a quarter, you treat it like a half and you give one team the ball to start the other team. I don't need this to be perfectly
fair. Yeah.
No, but I want to make this very clear. From my vantage point, I don't need fairness. I don't. I know there's going to be an advantage or an edge. That's part mm-hmm. of these games. There's always an advantage or an edge. What I want is the perception of more fairness. That's all. This is a perception issue. I just want it to be that Josh Allen gets an opportunity there, right? I just mm-hmm. don't think it's a good look for the league when you say, yep, one guy, we got the best player in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, won a coin toss. Every person on the planet knows it's going to need a miracle to keep him in those two weapons out of the end zone here. So we're not going to have one electric Josh Allen response. I don't know why you wouldn't want less of that. The other thing that I should just say quickly too, though, that should be factored into this game is – that's one of the best games I've ever seen in my entire life. Maybe the mm-hmm. best game I've ever seen in my entire life, right? Not every game is Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen going toe-to-toe. So when we're trying to consider these things about the future of the playoffs and the future of, you know, one guy not getting the ball, or why wouldn't you want more of that game, is, well, some games are stinkers, you know? Some games are not the best. Some games it is better if the team wins the coin toss and just walks that sucker off and it's a 52% edge technically or whatever the hell. Like, I'm just saying that we're putting a lot on one spectacular game, and if we're doing the Blake Murphy sample size thing, that, you know, tell me the other time that you felt like overtime was really cheated from you from a brilliant football game that you couldn't get enough of like that. Come on, let's be real.
Yeah, you trying to see extra of that Jaguars-Dolphins game from week six?
Yeah.
Like if the Jags just, you know, don't go for the win there or don't manage it, you have to sit through another 20 minutes of that. I mean, no one was watching that game but me anyway, but, you know, there are probably three or four of those games for every Mahomes-Allen one.
So a couple of people are on the same wavelength here with no coin flip, just possession change. Each team does two two-minute drills with two timeouts. Most points, if tied, quickest score.
Again, you end up with a big advantage for the team that goes last. Like, they know what the points are that they need to accumulate. So you got to remember that if your argument is just simply that both teams get the ball, then fine. You can make all those scenarios. But every time you do that kind of stuff, where it's the second team gets the ball thing or most points gets the thing, there's another big advantage. You will find that the second team will have a huge advantage every single time. Use the extra down, go for the two-point conversion, all that different stuff. So if you're looking for fairness, that's not the solution for me. And if you're looking for the perception of fairness, that's going to end up in another conversation like 10 minutes later about why they screwed up the rule and why they changed the rule to something else.
Kimmy in Bracebridge, to create better NFL football, shorten the play clock to 25 seconds throughout the game, resulting in more plays and less coaching to milk the clock.
Whoa, Kimmy, what? No one asked how to make football better, okay? We just said, how do we change the overtime rules? Football is fine. Have you not been paying attention? Football is a juggernaut. They don't need to change a damn thing. 25-second play clock would be insane. I would hate that, actually. Like, could you imagine
so
on deep
rushed
plays?
Go, go, go.
But all of a sudden, there's a disadvantage to a big play down the field. Like,
yeah.
It's like you have a 60-yard play, and all of a sudden, everybody's running down, and you're gassing out your offensive lineman. No, 40 seconds is the right play. There's enough plays. I'm sorry, Kimmy. I can't get with this rule change for you. But, yes, I'm talking about overtime here. Football itself, like, look at what just happened. Look at what just happened this weekend. Who wants to change football? If anything, like I said, make all the other teams fold so that we all start funneling every athlete into football so that we can have more football and not bother with all these other sports that are not even close in terms of their value to football. Like, it's football and then all the other sports are trash and we're just watching all these trash games to fill time between football. That's all that's happening here.
I love this one. I know it's just ridiculous, but a lot of people have said it. Is just have it a battle of the field goal kickers. Start on like the 40 and then you keep going back 5 yards until someone misses. Obviously, that's just not going to happen. But just a funny like shootout type
Bengals
end to a game. It would be really like just the amount of guts you'd have to be that kicker that goes out there and just fires away like 5 or 6 kicks in a row. Whew.
Can I tell you something though about that idea? I actually kind of love that for regular season games that end in ties. Like, if it's like the shootout in hockey where you go, hey, once we finish the 3-on-3 overtime, we're moving to a shootout. And it's for regular season. The problem is you have 82 of them in the AFL. I get it. And only 17 in the NFL. But I actually would love to see at the end of the overtime where it's tied, they just go, yep, all right, it's now horse between the kickers, but only 2 kicks. McPherson's going to try to bomb a 70-yarder here for fun.
You have to choose. Like, you're the kicker. You have to choose where you're
most
confident.
Oh, yeah, the kicker
from
has to choose. Oh, yeah, he picks the spot, and he goes, maybe that's another coin toss. The other kicker gets to go first, infuriate people. I don't know. Maybe it's just because of McPherson, but all of a sudden I'm way more interested in kicking. Like, McPherson was, I think, the most electric kicker I've ever seen in my entire life. I really do believe that. Justin Tucker is obviously the GOAT, but those McPherson kicks were bombs! And for him to say to his team, like, field goal kickers are supposed to be the ultimate, like, shut the hell up guys, like, never say anything, don't jinx them, don't talk to them, don't do anything, like, and if he actually said, looks like we're going to the AFC Championship game before he went out there, like, if that's not just Joe Burrow saying that and lying about that, if that really happened, I would say McPherson's one of my top 13 players in the NFL.
And did you see that the Bengals tweeted afterwards, that's why you draft a kicker?
Yeah,
and
that
they're
was
just
a dumb
being tweet. Oh, come on. They're being a little petty. I liked it. But the quote, the fact that he said he went out and just said, yep, it's going to happen. We're going to the championship. Woo!
Do you know
if
what
he didn't hit
me of
that, imagine.
Yeah. That, you know what that made me think of? That Bengals tweet where they go, that's why you draft a kicker. One of the things you always see is people tweet at social media accounts as though it is the team. Like Jerry Jones is sitting behind the Cowboys right. Twitter account scrolling, being like, oh, what do the people think about my Cowboys? It's like, no, it's some intern, essentially. It's some starter entry-level position for some kid in their early 20s who is just eating just the worst of you. The worst of you are tweeting at these team accounts. I hate you, Cowboys. Burn in hell. Like, you know, just the vile things you send to those team accounts. It's some essentially teenager who's reading those things feeling bad. The person who wrote that kicker tweet saw all the vile things that through when the Bengals tweeted.
They took it
the
personally.
Bengals dropped the kicker. Yep, they took it personally. They banked it. And then that was whatever 23-year-old girl that tweeted for the Bengals account, she banked that and then she put that out in the universe after that happened. That's exactly what that tweet was.
Oh God. Here's another fun one. And obviously not something realistic, but how about a quarterback accuracy contest? 5 to 10 targets a hit. Whoever records the fastest time hits the most targets. Like kind of like a skills competition. That'd be pretty fun.
Now I don't even know what we're doing anymore because it's like, what are we doing? Like, imagine that would be it. You know what I do wish, though, is like the Pro Bowl has those competitions where they have quarterback accuracy stuff. I've always wondered why the NFL doesn't just have tire toss. You know, like every movie you ever grew up watching with football was a tire hanging from a tree. Why would the Pro Bowl not embrace a competition with quarterbacks that's just tire hanging from a tree? You know, tire hanging from a tree, who could put the most footballs through it? I love that competition. Who wouldn't watch that? I would definitely watch that. You're telling me you two wouldn't watch tire, like, through the tire?
It'd be hilarious.
Buddy, I've seen Varsity Blues enough time.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's the most, like, that's the winter classic of football. Let me see somebody throw a football through a tire. A professional, one time in my life, please.
Okay, last one before we have to say goodbye to this topic, but a fun one. To decide who gets the ball in overtime, let's see the old XFL rush for the ball at the start of the game, ball at midfield, and have both special teams race to the ball.
Was that text sent in by CTE? Was that just boost? Boy, that's
it reminds me of like dodgeball when you start and everyone runs up to the middle to grab the balls, but it would be a lot more physical. So don't think that one's coming back, but very fun.
It's been a good text line day. Keep those coming throughout the week. 590, 590. Maybe not time the next day or two because the Raptors play tonight, and then the Raptors and Leafs both play tomorrow night. Another day to digest those line shakeups and see how the Raptors measure up to the Charlotte Hornets tonight. And then DeMar and the Chicago Bulls tomorrow. We'll have all that for you tomorrow and more. Follow us at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4Far, Blake Murphy, at Fan590, and subscribe to wherever you get this podcast. Don't forget, too, giving away Zach Brown Band tickets every day this week. So stay tuned in, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Have a wonderful, I think it's Tuesday. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.